And we're holding on page 14 in Yerushalmi Shkolim, about the middle of the page, of Yom Yisholach L'Rav Zeira, middle of Os Yud Zayin. Somebody just seems to skip a couple of numbers over here, so I guess it might be the middle, it goes from Yud Zayin to Chof, so I guess it might be the middle of Os Yud Ches, I don't know. Anyway. We learned previously about the, where we said that the, if the earlier generations of Chachamim were like Malachim, then we were like people. If they were like people, then we were like donkeys, and not even the donkeys of Pinchas Ben Yair, not even like the donkey of Pinchas Ben Yair, but rather like an ordinary donkey. And that brought in the story of Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey that wouldn't eat food that was osur, or even food that there was a chashash of isur in. So now the Gemara mentions, on the other hand, the counterpoint to that, where we see that the later generations are taken not on that level. Rav Yirmiyah sholach l'Rav Ze'era chad tartel de ta'enim. Rav Yirmiyah one time sent to Rav Ze'era a basket of figs. Rav Yirmiyah Omar, now Rav Yirmiyah hadn't taken ma'aser from them before he sent them, but he figured Rav Yirmiyah Omar, Rav Yirmiyah says to himself, Efshir Rav Ze'era achilton d'loy mesaknon, surely Rav Ze'era would not possibly eat these figs unless he takes ma'aser, so I don't need to take ma'aser. I can rely on him being a chover that he's going to do that. Reb Ze'era, on the other hand, when Reb Ze'era got the basket, he said to himself, Efshel Reb Yumia, Dilemashalach Lohen Mesaknon, is it possible that Reb Yumia would send me fruit that's not ma'aser, which would be a problem, even if not lifnei iver, whatever, you're not really supposed to. So the point is, each one assumed that the other one was going to do or had done the right thing. Bein dein l'dein. So between the two of them, isachon te'enun b'tivlayu, it wound up Reb Ze'era, whoever, or somebody from his family, wound up eating those figs when they were tevel, which is awesome. L'mocha kom Reb Yumia im Reb Ze'era. The next day, Reb Yumia met up with Reb Ze'era. Omalei, and he asked him, Tikanta ilan te'naya, did you take ma'aser from those figs that I sent you? Omalei loy, and Reb Ze'era says no, because I figured you had. Omalei Reb Abba, Reb Moino, Reb Zmina, l'Reb Ze'era, so that prompted Reb Abba to say to Reb Ze'era, like we said before, in havon kadmoi malachin, if the earlier generations were like malachim, anan b'nei noshi, then we're on the level of human beings. The inhabu b'nei noshi, and if the earlier generations were on the level of people, anan chamorin, then we're like donkeys, the less anan tachamauti did a Pinchas Ben Yair, and yet we're not even on the level of a Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey, because, like we told the story before, chamauti did a Pinchas Ben Yair, yavon lasadi tivli, in a Pinchas Ben Yair's case, with his donkey, the robbers that we learned previously that had stolen the donkey, offered it food that was tevel, and afterwards at home, they offered it also food that was tevel, loy och lo yosa, and it wouldn't eat them because Hashem protects, as the Gemara says in various places, that Hashem protects that even behemtim shal tzadikim, even the animals of tzadikim, Hashem doesn't cause that a takola, that something should go wrong with them. Va'anan achlin te'naid tzvilin, and look at this, says Reb Abba, we, meaning actually you, Reb Ze'era, ended up eating figs that were tevel. So that bears out this point. In other words, that we're not even on the, that if we're going to say that we're like donkeys, then we're not even on the level of the Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey. So Tosfos actually discusses in a number of places in Shas where this point is brought, that Tzadikim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe Takol Al Yodam. Tosfos mentions, first of all, that concept applies primarily only to eating things that are osur. It would be a gnai for a tzaddik that he should eat something that's osur, and the Rebbe explains in a sticha, because since we learn in Tanya, what a person eats becomes damo bosa kibsore, it becomes blood, flesh and blood, like his own, then it would be a gnai that a tzaddik should have cells in his body that are made out of dvar isu. So Tosfos points out, there are actually a couple of places in Shas where we do find that tzaddikim ate at a time that was osur. So Tosfos says that's different. A time that's osur is not the same thing as food that's osur. As far as this point over here, well, that's exactly the point that Reb Abba is making, that in the earlier generations, they had that special protection from Hashem, but in the later generations, not necessarily. Other Rishonim talk about different other angles on it, one of them being that in this case, Reb Ze'era and Reb Yumia themselves were careless. Reb Ze'era should have realized there is a possibility that these figs haven't been ma'aser, and should have asked Reb Yumia before he goes ahead and eats from them, and therefore, so for that, Hashem doesn't necessarily give him that special protection. Anyway, so all that bears out this point, though, that we're not even, that in later, to the later generations, and we mean even the later generations of Amiroyim, because Reb Ze'era and Reb Yumi are Amiroyim, after all, even they are not on the level of the Chachamim of 100 or 200 years earlier, such as Reb Pinchas Ben Yair. One thing, by the way, I saw a vote on when we mentioned this lashon. If the earlier generations were malachim, then we're people, and if we're people, and if they were people, then we're donkeys that we talked about the other day. One point that Tiklun Chadatin makes, the point that it means, in other words, a person is, after all, somewhat like a malach and somewhat like an animal. So if the earlier generations were able to be on the level of malachim, to have that side of them be stronger, then we're at least on the level of people. We have them more balanced out. Whereas if they were on the level of people, then we have them unbalanced, and we have them on the, and when we, by us, the behemish tzad is stronger. I once saw another vote on it as well. What it means is, if we look at the earlier generations as malachim, then we have the right at least to consider ourselves human beings. But if we look at them that they were human beings, they were people, that people don't always know everything, people can make mistakes, etc., and we're going to talk like that about the Chachamim, then we deserve to be called no better than animals with that kind of attitude. The next piece over here is actually taken from the Bavli in Bav Metzia. The reason it belongs over here, the reason it goes over here, our Kosef explains, since we had before, we learned previously about that Rav Chagai had said that the earlier generations, again, we're talking about the contrast between the earlier generations of the Chachamim and the later ones, so we're saying the earlier generations put in all the effort to make Torah so easily accessible and easily understandable by us, and we gave the example that they went through all the different processes that are involved in making a loaf of bread, everything from plowing all the way to actually baking the bread, and yet, as Rav Chagai said before, we don't have the ability to eat it, meaning, in other words, to understand Torah properly. So in that connection, then Rabbi Yaakov ibn Chaviv, the compiler of Ein Yaakov, put in here the following piece from Bav Metzia, where also we see Rav Chia going through step by step to make it possible for children to learn Torah. So in the same way as we're saying that the Rishonim went through all of the steps to make Torah accessible to us, the same way Rav Chia did in his time. So the Gemara tells, Ki avu minsu Rav Chanina v'Rav Chia, when Rav Chanina and Rav Chia would be arguing which one's approach to Torah is, and which one's approach to Torah is better. So first the Gemara mentions that Rav Chanina would say to Rav Chia, who would say, you know what, I my abilities in Torah are so great that if the Torah were to be forgotten, Chas v'Shalom, I would be able to reconstruct all of it using my pilpul. I have such an ability to deduce one thing from another in Torah that I would be able to put it all back together based on my ability to analyze things logically. So now, but Rav Chia answers, Amar Rav Chia l'Rav Chanina, Bahadi didi kominsis, you're arguing with me, you're telling me that your approach is better because you would, if the Torah was forgotten, you would be able to reconstruct it. Da'avdi l'Torah, d'loy t'shkachach m'Yisrael. To begin with, I make it that the Torah should not be forgotten in the first place. And then your skills at reconstructing it wouldn't even be needed. Maya vidna, said Rav Chia describes, what do? Azlina, I go, v'shadina kitna, I go and plant flax, v'gadilna nishvi, and then I use the flax to weave nets, v'tsayidna tavi, I use the nets to trap deer, and I use the skin from the deer of Avidna Megilta. In the Gemara, it also mentions the detail that he takes the meat from the deer and gives it to poor people. Avidna Megilta, I use the skin from the deer to make parchment scrolls. Because Sivna Hei Chumashi, and I write down the five Chumashim on the scrolls. The Salikna Lamasa. Then I go to a city. The Gemara, when it brings this in Bav Metzia, and so this adds the detail that it's a city that doesn't have Malamdim for the children. We have to realize, by the way, when Rav Chia lived. Rav Chia was a Talmud Chavar of Rebbe. They're living not long after you had in the couple of generations before that, you had the Churban, and then you had only a couple of decades after that, you had the whole war of Bar Kochva and the destruction of Beta and the destruction of many of the cities in Eretz Yisrael and the killing of many Jews. And the fact is, most of the remaining Jews had to leave Eretz Yehuda and move to the Galil, the north of Eretz Yisrael. So it was literally like, much like the time after the Holocaust, there needs to be somebody to start putting things back together. So therefore, Rav Chia would say, I would go to a town and I would find there are no malamdim there because people are still trying to put their lives back together after all that dislocation. So, umakrina hei yinuki b'hei chumshi. I teach five children each one chumash. So one kid this way will learn directly from Rav Chiya chumash bereishis, and the next one will learn directly from him chumash shmois, etc. Umasnisa umasnina shita yinuki shita zori. Six other children, I teach them each one seder of Mishnayos. The Mishnayos weren't written down yet, so he didn't write them on the scrolls. He just taught them about there. And then I tell the 11 children that I just taught, Ad Hadana Vasina, when I return, eventually I'm going to return here and see how you're flourishing and learning over the years. But meanwhile, until I come back, Akru Hadodi Vasnu Hadodi, you teach each other your Chumashim, and you teach each other your Sedarim of Mishnayos. And that way, all of you will eventually know all the Chumashim and all of the Sedarim of Mishnayos. But Abdullah the Torah, the Tishtakach Yisrael. And in that way, says Rav Chiya, I make sure on the retail level, town by town, that the Torah won't be forgotten from the Jewish people. Hainu da'omer Rebbe, and thus we find Rebbe says on it, look how great are the deeds of Chiya, that he took his time to do all of this. Now, the point is, in other words, again, the reason why Ein Yaakov is bringing in this story over here is with similar to we said, the Chachamim put in such tremendous effort for us to be able to learn Torah, breaking things down and putting things in a systematic order and giving us klolim and so on and protim and so on and so forth so that we should be able to learn. So here you have in a similar vein, Rav Chiya didn't delegate all of the preparatory stages to somebody else. On the face of it, why does he have to go? He has to go and grow the flax and trap the deer and write the Megillus and everything himself. He couldn't just go buy ready-made Megillus. But the point is, no, that he realized that every single one of these details is itself part of the mitzvah. In fact, Akosev goes on to say over here, like this, if you see a Jew growing flax and planting flax, and you know that he is doing like Rav Chiya, that he's growing that flax for this kind of purpose, ultimately to do a mitzvah, then it would be quite correct to say right now, this guy is doing a mitzvah. He's planting flax just like any other farmer in the world who plants flax. But no, he's doing it with a mitzvah in mind, and therefore that itself becomes a mitzvah. So that was Rav Chiya's way of thinking of it, which is why he wanted to do it all himself. I once saw an explanation related to that as well, which is Rav Chiya knew that because he's doing this to restore Torah, to keep Torah from being forgotten by the Jewish people, and he needs to be able to teach these children on the highest possible level. Therefore, he needed to make sure that everything, that every step of the thing was done absolutely the Shem Shemayim. So he can't just go to the store, he can't just go to the Sfarim store, to the sofa or whatever, and buy ready-made Megillus of Chumashim. He has to do everything, who knows what Kavanas they were made with. He has to do it himself, so he knows that every detail of it was done with the Kavana of being able to preserve the Torah among the Jewish people. Anyway, so that's why that story is brought in over here, and therefore, so Rebbe is saying, look at what Rav Chiya is accomplishing. In fact, the Gemara mentions in Ksubas, the Gemara asks the question, when Rebbe passed away, why didn't he appoint Rav Chiya as the next Rosh Yeshiva? So first the Gemara says maybe Rav Chiya passed away first, but then the Gemara says not necessarily, because Rebbe knew that Rav Chiya is busy with this important task of going around from one favorfen of village to another and teaching Jewish children Torah. Therefore, Rebbe realized as important as it is to be the Rosh Hashiva and teach the next generation of Chachamim, it's more important what Rav Chiya is doing to go around and be mechanech the next generation of children. As the Medrash says, the famous expression, if there's no young kids, young kid goats, there aren't going to eventually be any mature goats. So therefore, it's more important what Rav Chiya is doing to make sure that there are the kid goats now who are learning Torah, and eventually they will mature into the great, some of them at least will mature into the great Chachamim. The Mishnah says, continuing in the Perek, again, much of Masechta Shkolim is dealing, because Masechta Shkolim deals with the Machzor Shekel, therefore it ends up dealing with a lot of the fiscal dealings of the Bais HaMikdash and a lot of the operating procedures of the Bais HaMikdash. We have to remember, by the way, you know, I mean, we think of the Bais HaMikdash, it's a place of Korbanos, it's a place of where Hashem's Shechina is, but you know, think of like, for example, a shul. You come to a shul, you come to Davin, and then it's a Mikdash Ma'at. You're coming there to daven and to be close to the Eibishter. But after all, you know, whoever's the gabbai and the shamish and the board and whatever of a shul are well aware that there's a lot of things that have to happen behind the scenes in order for the shul to continue running. Somebody has to deal with the electric bill, and somebody has to deal with getting the janitors and fixing things v'chola in much the same way. The Bis Mikdash, there's a whole apparatus going on behind the scenes to keep things running smoothly. So a lot of Masechta Shkolim deals with details of that. So the Mishnah mentions Shtei L'shochas Hayu B'Mikdash. There were two particular chambers in the Bis Mikdash where people would put donations. Now, you had the chamber where they put the matzah shekel, but that wasn't, generally speaking, a person wouldn't come and bring his own individual matzah shekel there. Usually, they would collect them in the towns, and then the gizbarim would go and bring them and put them in that chamber. The Mishnah mentions earlier in the Masechta that the Rav Gamliel, being the Nasi, they would give him and his family the special privilege of going and depositing their matzah shekel in the chamber personally. But other than that, no. But here you have two chambers that were open for anybody to go and put things in that to put nedavos in voluntarily. Achas lishkas hashoyim, v'achas lishkas hakelim. One was called the lishkas hashoyim, the lishka of the secret ones. Hashoyim means a whisper or quiet. So the lishka of the secret quiet thing. V'achas lishkas hakelim, and the other one was called the chamber of the kelim. Lishkas hashoyim was called that because yirech pet noisin l'secha b'chashai. People who fear sin, people who are Yirei Shamayim, would put tzedakah in there secretly, and people who were poor people who were from good families, and they shouldn't have to go, it would be beneath their dignity to have to go around to beg for nedavos, they would come and be able to say that the gizborim would allow them, I guess the pashtos at certain times or whatever, to come and collect money from it in secret. In fact, the Rambam writes, when the Rambam mentions the famous eight levels of tzedakah, the highest level is that you don't give tzedakah, but rather you give the person a job or lend them money or whatever so that they can establish a business so they can support themselves. But once you're at the point where a person has to receive tzedakah, then the highest level is where you give it, where the giver and the receiver don't know who each other are. That way there's no embarrassment. The receiver is not embarrassed to, the recipient is not embarrassed to see the person that he received tzedakah from. And the giver doesn't feel proud over look at what I did for this particular person. So this lishkas hashoyim is exactly that kind of thing. And similarly, the Rambam writes, when you have a tzedakah fund, when you have a gabbai tzedakah in town who's thoroughly honest and you can trust him, then that's also the same kind of thing. You're giving through him, and the giver and the recipient don't know each other. So that was the lishkas hashoyim. Lishkas HaKelim, then you had the Chamber of Kelim, Kol Mishu Misnadiv Kli, anybody who wanted to donate a keli for the Bis Mikdash, Zerka L'Sercha V'Chula, would throw the keli into that chamber, and every so often, every month, the Mishnah continues, the Gizbarim would open up the chamber, and they'd see any keli in there that the Bis Mikdash can actually use. Let's say, for example, there's a metal bowl there, that's a gold or silver bowl that they could use for a Mizruk in the Bis Mikdash or whatever, then they would take it and use it for the Bis Mikdash, and if not, then they would sell it and use the money towards the upkeep of the Bis Mikdash. So, since the Mishnah had mentioned the Lushkas Hashoyim, which again was a chamber where they gave tzedakah, and where there was one of the highest ways of giving tzedakah, so the Gemara mentions a little bit about a couple of stories about the importance of giving tzedakah, about the importance of giving tzedakah in the proper ways. So the Yerushalmi, our Mishnah Zuru, says, Rav Chanina bar Papa have a maflik mitzvah b'leilya. Rav Chanina bar Papa used to give out mitzvah, meaning tzedakah, by night. In the Yerushalmi, in a number of places, the word mitzvah is the term used for tzedakah. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, because tzedakah, in a way, is the ultimate mitzvah, in the sense a mitzvah involves that you're taking something gashmiyistik and using it to serve the Eibishter. So each individual mitzvah, you have a particular aver, you have a particular part of your body that you're doing the mitzvah with, your hand and arm for your arm and head for tefillin, and your mouth for learning Torah and so forth. Whereas when it comes to tzedakah, you're giving your whole mitzvah into it, because your whole mitzvah was involved in the job from which you earn the money, and even if you didn't get it from a job, even if, let's say, for example, you found a buried treasure or something, and you inherited it, you could have used this money to buy something for yourself, some food to nourish your body, and instead you're giving away to tzedakah. So therefore, tzedakah is the quintessential mitzvah, and therefore the Yerushalmi calls it by the name mitzvah generically. Anyway, so Rav Chanina bar Papa then would give out tzedakah at night. Chadzman Pogabe Rabhan Yeruchaya. One time the chief of the spirits of the Shadim met up with him. Omale, and he says, Loik Dein Alfan Rebbe, didn't you, Rebbe, teach us, as the Pasuk says, Loi Sasik Vureacha, don't overstep your fellow Yid's boundary. Meaning, in other words, he's saying the night time is the boundary, the night time is the time designated for Shadim to be able to roam around. You're giving tzedakah interferes with that, because Shadim, after all, HaKoychas HaTumah, and the Kedusha that you're bringing into the world with your tzedakah is interfering with us. Omale, Sarah of Chanina answers back, Veloik Siv Kedain. Yes, but on the other hand, doesn't the Pasuk also say, Matan Baseser Yich Be'af, a gift of tzedakah that's given in secret will control and cover over anger. So meaning, in other words, yes, you Shadim, you Ruchas, represent the anger of Hashem, but the Matan Baseser, giving in secret, and the nighttime is a better time for that, because people aren't on the street, so they won't see where I'm dropping off the tzedakah, is the best thing to overcome that af. So yes, he's saying, in other words, I have every right to do that. Fakirk, you get out of the way, because you're interfering with my mitzvah. And sure enough, Baba Mr. Femine, sure enough, the head of the chief of the Shadim was afraid of Rav Chanina and the mitzvah that he's doing, Orik Mikamoi, and he ran away from his presence. So we see, in this particular case, Rav Chanina won the argument. With that said, it is brought in various places in Sfarim that other things being equal, it is better not to give tzedakah at night, based on what we're saying over here, that after all, the Eibishter did create these Shadim and these Koychos HaTumah, and they do have a right to have a certain time during the day when they have the right to roam around, at least within limitations. So here, in other words, Rav Chanina had a particular good reason to be giving at night, the pashtus, because again, so it should be baseser, so you can give it without anybody knowing. But when it comes to that kind of thing, obviously if there's a poor person comes to your door at night, or you're in shul at night, and a poor person is collecting, then to say it's night, it shouldn't be a time to give tzedakah is not an excuse. But we're talking about, let's say, for example, a person is going to put tzedakah in a pushka, let's say. You could just as well do it by day as you could by night. So then, based on the Gemara, it's brought in various forms. And better not to do it. Better to leave it for the morning.
But email donation or like that kind of.
So an email donation, vesechnisht. I mean, it's somewhat the same kind of thing. I mean, again, you know, it depends if they're doing one of these charity campaigns, for example, where there's a deadline, and if you only have 5 more minutes, then by all means do it by night. But if it's the kind of thing where you would just as well be able to do it in the morning, and it wouldn't make a difference. And lachora based on that, it's the kind of thing. It's not the kind of thing that you can really, it'd be one of those kinds of things that a person should discuss in advance with their mashpia. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yonah, Ashrei Noisin El Dal En Ksiv Kan. Now you have a pasuk that said that you have a pasuk in Tehillim, Ashrei Maskil El Dal. Happy is the person who maskil, who uses his seichel towards the poor person. So Rav Yonah says, look at that word maskil. This is not, it doesn't say actually noisin al dal, happy is the person who gives to the poor, el ashrei maskil al dal. So it's not just enough to give, you have to give it with seichel. And the word seichel is also related to the word mistakel, to gaze, to observe. So zeh mistakel, the tzedakah of a mitzvah, heyach lasoisa. That means when a person doesn't just stam give tzedakah, means that he thinks into it and observes what is the best and what is the most effective way to do it. For example, Ketzer Hoyer Rav Yonah Oisa. For example, what would Rav Yonah do? Now, given that, as we said, the highest level of within tzedakah, as opposed to loans and finding a job or whatever, but within, when it comes to giving tzedakah, the highest thing is, again, when neither the giver nor the receiver see each other, but not always is that possible. Especially, for example, what Amma mentions, if you live in a city where the Gaboi Tzedakah are not so reliable, then you can't rely on them to give out your Tzedakah, and you don't know the Lishkas HaShoyim was in the Bais HaMikdash, it's not available on an ongoing basis. So you may have no choice but to give Tzedakah to a person in a way where there's going to be a face-to-face encounter, or there may not. I mean, the Amma mentions, you have, for example, it's possible, you have demand, the Gemara mentions in different places, for example, Chachamim, you have, for example, the story of, the story of Ma'ukva and the Gemara and Ksubas, who would go every Erev Shabbos, every night actually, every Thursday night, and he would leave money secretly by people's doors. Yeah, the other way around, where it mentions one of the Chachamim, Reb Abba, I think, would sit with a bag of money slung over his shoulder, and poor people would come and take from the bag. So in the one case, Mazutra knows who he's giving to, but the poor people don't know who they're receiving from. In the other case, it's the other way around. The people know that they're getting from Reb Abba, but Reb Abba doesn't see who they are. These are various levels in tzedakah that the Rambam mentions. Be that as it may, sometimes you have no choice. Sometimes it has to be face-to-face. So how would Rabbi Yona do? Even within that, you have to be maskil odo. You have to do it in the most intelligent and far-sighted way. So kshahoya roya oni ben tovim shiyorin min chasav. If Rabbi Yona saw a poor person who was from a chosh of a family and had lost his wealth, so mela, in other words, a person has grown up poor, then he hasn't grown up with that kind of dignity. He doesn't feel it so humiliating to go around and beg for tzedakah. But when you have an oni ben tovim shiyorin min chasav, he used to be rich and now he's lost his wealth, so now it's very embarrassing for him to accept tzedakah b'chal, not only to go around begging for it, even to receive it. So what would Rabbi Yonah do? Hayo'omelo, he would tell him, Bni, b'shvil sheshamayti shenofel ha'yerushim makam acher, I heard that you're about to get an inheritance from someplace else. I heard that a rich relative of yours someplace else is going to be getting an inheritance from him. So but right now, you don't have the money yet. So right now, in the short term, meaning a loan, so take some money from me as a loan, va'at pereya, and you'll pay me back afterwards when you get the Yerusha. Ninda have a nosiv, only after the guy received the money, Omer would take the money, have a omale, then Rabbi Yonah would say, tell him, Matoni Hiloch, you know what, it's a gift, you don't have to pay me back. So in that way, he preserves the guy's dignity, that's Ashe Maskil Odol. Tiklan Chadatin, by the way, points out that actually it's not, now on the face of it, it's not true, on the face of it, what Rabbi Yonah is saying is not true. Okay, so you could say you're allowed to lie for the purposes of Dalche Shalom, but Tiklan Chadatin says, the fact is that in a way, there's not really a lie over here. There's a pasuk in Mishlei, he quotes a pasuk that says, "Bayis v'hoin nachos others." A person has a house and a person has a wealth. That's something that he inherits from his ancestors. But how does a person have a nice house or wealth? Is because he inherited it from his ancestors. But sometimes you have. So sometimes you have a person doesn't have ancestors who can bequeath him such a thing. In that case, he collects tzedakah from people, and that's how he eventually can earn a bayis and a hoin. So therefore, Rabbi Yonah is telling him by way of hint, it's true you don't have any money, and the money and the people that you actually and your relatives, your ancestors that you and your close relatives that you would have inherited from, that money is gone. But nevertheless, you do have, in a way, you have other, Hashem has put in the world other people who will step into that role of others to you and give you tzedakah, one of them being me. So therefore, he's not really lying. And as far as the said, and then he's saying matana hiloch because he's saying also, you know, galgal hishachoyz of olam. Eventually it may be the other way around. You'll be rich, and I or my descendants will be poor, and you'll have the opportunity to repay them the favor. Another example, is have a seven via minun. Chia Ba'ada, one of the Chachamim, there were old people in his times. Mandahavi Yohiv Loim, Ben Reish Shatel, anything that he would give them between Rosh Hashanah and the great fast, meaning Yom Kippur, have a nasvin, they would take it. Min Bosakein, Loi have a nasvin, but after that they would refuse to accept tzedakah from him throughout the rest of the year. Amrin, they said, Dishat and Gabon, whatever is going to be for us for the year is already by us, because we know the Eidosh decides for what's going to be between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So they said, so after Yom Kippur, the Eidosh has already decided on our income for the year, so now there's no point in us taking tzedakah from you throughout the rest of the year after Yom Kippur until the following Rosh Hashanah. So this is another example of Ashrei Maskil Odol, that they themselves, the poor people themselves, are maskil, and they realize what the proper way is. And Eitz Yosef also makes the point that they knew that because these are days of Truva, we're right now in that time, Aseres Yemei Truva, they knew people need chusim, so therefore they would be willing to accept money during that time, not only because, first of all, it's up in the air how much they're going to make for the year, but also because this way they can be mezaka the people who are giving them tzedakah. The rest of the year, the people don't need as much chusim, and they themselves know whatever's been destined by Hashem we're going to have has been established during those 10 days, and that's that. Another example involving tzedakah, the Gemara tells, Nechemia ish Shichin pogabe Yerushalmi echad. Nechemia from Shichin One time, a certain fellow from Yerushalayim, a poor person, met up with him. Omale, so the man says to Nehemiah, Zechei imi chodatana gilta. Receive a schus with me, meaning through me, by giving me money for a chicken. The guy wanted, in other words, he wanted money for tzedakah to buy a chicken to eat. Now, in those times, we find in various places, in Shas and Midrashim, in those times, chicken was more expensive than beef. Nowadays, it's the other way around, but back then, that's how it was. You find, for example, Rashi mentions in Parshas Pinchas, in connection with the Korbanos of Sukkos, where we know the number of parim goes down day by day, and Rashi brings from Sifri over there, that's like when you have a guest, you start by feeding him the really expensive food, and then day by day, as he becomes more member of the household, you feed him the cheaper stuff. And Rashi mentions in that connection, the progression is that one day you're feeding him chicken and the next day you're feeding him beef. So that's how it was back then, that chicken was more expensive. Why that's changed, basically. Anyway. So the guy is asking, in other words, for a luxury, basically. Omalei, so Nehemiah answers him, Halo, you don't need something as expensive as that. Haloch tumisa, here's some money for you. Vizil sav kuper, go buy yourself some meat, some beef. The guy went and bought himself some beef, and he ate it, but then he passed away, because he wasn't used to it. He was used to eating chicken. Apparently he had developed expensive tastes. So Nehemiah was crying out and saying, come and make a hesped and cry over the person that Nehemiah killed. In other words, I should have realized that the guy is used to eating chicken, and therefore to make him eat something that he's not used to is not going to be good for his health. The Gemara in Ksubas, actually, there's a whole sugya in Masechta Ksubas. That's where you have the story of Ma'ukva and the secret tzedakah and other stories, for example. So it mentions the story with Nehemiah as well, although there the Gemara tells it differently. That this guy comes to Nehemiah and asks him again for money to buy a chicken, and Nehemiah offers him, he says, Ritzon chashtegalgal imi ba'adoshim. Are you willing to manage with me eating lentils? In other words, I'm poor myself. I don't have money to give you for luxuries like that. But look, you're poor also. You should get used to eating simpler fare. And so the guy tries it, but then again, it's not what he's used to, and he ends up passing away. And the Gemara says, the expression over there that Nehemiah says on him, Oyla zeh shahorga Nehemiah, woe to this person that Nehemiah killed him. And the Gemara says, why wouldn't even woe to him? If anything, woe to Nehemiah. Because the Gemara says, after all, it is kind of the guy's fault. It is true. He should have accustomed himself to not living quite so luxuriously. Now that he's poor, he had a responsibility towards the tzibur. To not waste their tzedakah money and to taka get used to simpler food. So therefore, yes, in a way, Nehemiah bears responsibility, but on the other hand, the guy also bears a certain responsibility for not accustoming himself to his new situation. Another story about tzedakah. Actually, this one we'll leave for tomorrow. Actually. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Zayin Tishrei. La'asid Lavoi, everybody in the world is going to see in actuality and in a very open way the real mitzios of the Jewish people, which is to say that they're going to see the essence of the neshama, which is one, which is united with the atzmus and mahus of Hashem Yisbarach, as the Zohar says, Yisturo v'kut shabrich v'kul achad. I think I've mentioned this shiur before, a marshal that the Medrash gives on it, where there's a piece of wood that's being used as a like you have in the mikveh, a thing to step on so you don't get your feet wet. And then one day the king is coming to town, and that piece of wood happens to be the best one available to carve on an image of the king that they're going to display in the public square in honor of the king's visit. And so all of a sudden now everybody's coming and bowing down in front of the wood, and people are saying, what, yesterday we were trampling all over this thing on the bathhouse, and now all of a sudden we're bowing in front of it, and the reason is because it's got the king's image on it. That makes all the difference. So the same way, Lost in Love, the Goyim are going to see how we have the king's image, and more than that, we're saying over here the Neshama, which is Yisro v'Kutsh B'Chol Kol Achad, and that's why they're going to respect us and see our real Metzios and bow to us. So the Rebbe continues in the Sicha then that this is the, now we have, there's five levels in the Neshama. So this is what we're talking about. All five of those levels are going to, we're going to see how this Yisro of Kodesh Bichol Kol Echad affects and goes through all of those five levels and all the Kochas and Nefesh, a person's sense of pleasure and his Rotzen and his Seichel and Midas and all the Levushim of Machshava, Dibra and Maisa. And also in the Gashmi, Stikaguf, or Ramach Evarim, Shasagidim, all of them, it's going to be visible, very clearly visible, and obvious that Yisro of Kodesh Bichol Kol Echad. Continuing with halachos of Aseres Yemei Teshuva and of Yom Kippur. So as far as Kiddush Levana, there are different minhagim on the subject. The most widespread minhag is based on the Ramah, says that we don't do Kiddush Levana during Aseres Yemei Teshuva because it's a time when we're worried. But after all, I mean, on the one hand, we're confident that they were going to be Zoycha Badin, but for it, it is days of a shtickle daiga. So therefore, better to do it after Yom Kippur when we're besimcha. On the other hand, there's an opinion among the poskim that says adrabah, do it before Yom Kippur, so you have more zchusim. It's not kol lefi hazman, so it really depends on the circumstances. One thing is check the weather forecast and see how it's likely to be after Yom Kippur. Then you have also where possible, you should also buy your dalad minim during these days. First of all, because that's when the good ones are available. You wait till after Yom Kippur, all the good ones are taken. But more to the point, again, because this way you have an extra mitzvah that's to your credit before Yom Kippur.